It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
And welcome to the show. Well, you know, I can't promise I won't use a big word, but I do promise I will not use it to try to impress, because that is silly. All right. Not silly is what's going on in the market. Lots to talk about. Let's get right to it with the
fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Yeah, I went a little quick on that, but Lisa wasn't quite ready for me. She had to move that finger fast to get to the button. Speaking of fast, let's hit those fast numbers. What do you got, Scott?
Well, Thursday's market was another pretty boring one. The Dow down, let's call it 9 and change. S&P up 1.5 points. NASDAQ up 11. Decent move on gold at 12 points. Oil basically flat, still hovering right, just a little inside $100 a barrel. Lots of news today, though, or on Wednesday, on Thursday. Chairman Bernanke.
Keep your days straight, Scott. Gotcha. You're confusing me over here.
Well, I get so focused.
I had to get a watch that had the, and of course I've left it in my office. I had to get a watch that had the actual day of the week on it, because I forget what day of the week it is.
I normally write it on my piece of paper, but I forgot. Chairman Bernanke testified in front of Congress today.
Ooh.
And he said that federal budget deficits are posing a significant threat to the U.S. economy and are likely to cause a crisis if not brought under control.
What do you mean? You mean that $500 billion a year we pay in interest on our existing debt?
That's the one. And okay. Paul Ryan, to his credit, said, we in Congress don't have the ability to control spending. We have the power to, but we just don't have the ability. We're like kids in candy shops. We just can't do it. And then you make these rates so low, so we figure we can just spend forever.
That's just absurd, but at least there's some honesty there.
Yeah, he was trying to illustrate the absurdity of it, and he caught a lot of press for it, so I guess that was probably
his point.
I'm sure
the press loved that.
Yep. Weekly unemployment claims, always on Thursday, which we got today, fell 12,000 to a seasonally adjusted 367,000, better than most analysts expected, although the big news comes on Friday. Friday morning, we get the so-called job situation from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, expecting new non-farm payrolls to be up 150,000 and the unemployment rate steady at 8.5%.
Yeah, because a lot of that will be absorbed by the increase in the workforce and folks that, you know, they're coming and going, so to speak. The friction, they're not going to really put a dent in that 13 million unemployment number.
Yep, that's right. And still, and we've illustrated this a number of times, 150,000 jobs a month is terrific for those 150,000 people, but it's not helping the economy anywhere near enough. We need a lot stronger job.
You know,
growth.
If you think about it, it's almost like, you know, I'm trying to think of a good analogy. It's almost like, you know, you got a farmer out there. You mentioned non-farm payrolls. Made me think of it. You got a farmer and he's prepared to feed, you know, 30 horses or something. And what if another 100 showed up?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we've got with this unemployment. 13 million people say, raise their hand, say, I'd like a job, and they can't get one. So there's 13 million people that are in the system that aren't getting the goods from the system.
Yep. So 8.5%. We're going to be in the 8%, even according to the Fed. We're going to be in the 8% throughout this year, throughout next year probably. So it's just too slow. But at least it's growth, and we're not going the other way. Drug maker Merck, we're still right in the very middle of earnings season. Drug maker Merck reported weaker than expected profits and really lowered their guidance going forward. A credit card company MasterCard had a big number. They posted earnings that topped estimates for the seventh straight quarter.
That's big. What was the profit? Big. It was a huge profit number.
Yeah, I didn't write down the profit
you
number.
Almost
it was
said,
a big one,
though. You know, it's funny. You almost said provoke. And, you know, when you said your profit numbers, when you think of provoke, they might provoke a reaction if they're too profitable, you know, that the regulators will say, hey, wait a minute, you're making too much money.
Well, so the stock was up quite a bit. Visa stock was up quite a bit today, too. Tells me analysts need to do a little bit better job if the profits have topped estimates for seven straight quarters. You know, the other side of that equation is analysts need to do a little bit of a better job there. Abercrombie & Fitch shares plunged pretty precipitously today.
Wow.
Basically said that teens were not buying clothes from them as much as they would like.
I don't know what the problem is. Maybe they ran out of that really strong smelling cologne that you always smell when you walk by the store.
You know, one of the analysts that I read a report of on Thursday afternoon said basically I can't go in there because the cologne is just it's overpowering.
I mean, I know I'm not their target market because I don't exactly look like the guy the big poster board that's in the window.
Yeah.
But I could not go in there. It's just so strong.
Yeah. I'm with you. So I don't shop there, and apparently a lot of teens who used to shop there no longer shop there because their earnings were quite bad.
Were they shopping on Twitter now?
Much of it is online.
Yeah. I mean, there's a big thing now about, you know, we're going to get to Facebook and talk a little bit about the IPO, but a lot of what's happening, there's a report out that a lot of folks, the young ones, are looking to get on Twitter instead of Facebook because it gives them more privacy from the folks that are trying to keep track of them. Well, anyway, Lisa's flashing the little... what do you call that, Lisa? A little fan, 5-second warning fan that she flashes at me. And we're going to take a quick break, back very quickly to talk more and to get into the Facebook IPO. Stick around.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Very smooth, Lisa. Nice. We just stuck the Finglish English intro right smack up next to, you say that a lot, right? Smack dab?
Sure.
Right smack dab right up next to the little break there talking about some very important information. Hey, you want to talk about the Super Bowl? What are you going to next?
Well, we talked yesterday about the January effect.
Okay, so you want to talk about the Super Bowl effect?
Yeah, and how that may or may not be an actual indicator. The big news for this week is the Super Bowl indicator. The Super Bowl indicator says that an NFC team, the National Football Conference, beats the AFC team, which is the American Football Conference. The market is up 80% of the time. So the market is rooting for a Giants win, which is the NFC contestant this year.
Okay. Who's on the other side?
Patriots.
Okay, so Giants versus Patriots.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't really follow it that closely, but
80% though.
But that's a fantastic percentage, and I respect the game. And I tell you what I love about the game is Wall Street Journal did a nice little write-up talking about what's going to happen. You want to talk about keeping score? There will be, over the weekend, there will be 100 million pounds of chicken wings eaten. That's 1.2...
That's in the U.S.?
5 billion wings. I think it's all U.S., yeah.
That's a lot of wings.
A lot of wings. It's enough wings to go around the world twice.
How are those poor chickens getting around?
You're going to be eating a lot of chicken. And, oh, listen to this, 111 million gallons of beer. That's enough to fill 168 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
That's a lot of beer.
Talk about swimming in your liquid refreshment.
Yep, that's a lot of beer, and I'm sure people will be talking about the ads on Monday and all that sort of traditional stuff. I wish they would do that game on Saturday.
I sure hope they're kind to any animals that they have in the commercials, because otherwise people are going to be pretty upset. So, no, dogs running in sneakers and stuff.
We'll keep an eye out.
Well, speaking of dogs running in sneakers... The Dow is, how was that? That was a good one.
It's running.
The Dow is back up. It's really, you know, it's made a steady climb. Back a few days ago, we had the market topped a 12.7. And, you know, I pulled an article, and it was really interesting. You know, you go back and look at the height, just to refresh everybody's memory. Everybody remembers the depth of the bottom when we got down to 6,500 on the Dow, which was March 6, 2009. But the top was, which is often not as easily remembered, was October 9th of 2007 when the Dow got up to a little over 14,000 points on the Dow.
So I remember that.
I do too. It was like, holy moly, that's a big number. So it's coming back. So the big question on their chap lips, no, the big question everybody has is what's going on and is it sustainable? Are we getting ahead of ourselves?
Well, I think we're seeing a couple things that really are encouraging to me. We're seeing a definite decoupling from Europe, meaning our market is not moving in lockstep with their markets. We're not reacting to every headline out of Europe. I think we're also starting to see some what we call sector rotation, where investors' money is coming out of what is traditionally seen as the more conservative parts of the stock market, like utilities and things like that, and starting to go into more growth-oriented sectors of the marketplace like tech. NASDAQ has been on just a tear this year.
And more discretionary stuff.
Yes.
And some pent-up
right.
demand stuff like computers, things like that, cars.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a lot of cash that was on the sidelines, particularly in the second half of last year, that institutional investors have to start to get to work. So there's going to be some buying pressure
there.
Well,
a lot
well.
Of them, too, were like, hey, whoa, we missed the run-up. We got to get in there. We need to get fully invested.
Yeah, but I mean, everything that I'm seeing basically, to me, looks like reasonable analysis of our economy, of what happens if there's a Greek default or a Portuguese default. The problem in markets comes when we have surprises. So any of those items that I just mentioned are not going to be surprises, so we're equipped to handle it.
So unless we have something really crazy, things seem to be calming down,
mm-hmm.
stabilizing,
yep.
and it just depends on if we get some sort of big shoe to drop.
Yeah, I do think we're on an upward trend. I'm liking a lot of the activity that we're seeing. The one thing that really has concerned me, there are two things that are concerning me. First, there is very, very, very little volume in the marketplace. Volume is...
Why do you think that is? You think that's more waiting and seeing kind of thing?
I think it's retail investors aren't back yet. And the other thing is that we're still seeing a lot of pressure on yield rates in Germany and the United States. Tens at 185, 187, something like that on Thursday's market. So a lot of money is still looking for some safety in buying into bonds, particularly safe bonds issued by Germany and the United States.
Well, I think once we start to see the European countries that have been the subject of so much concern about their risk and the quality of their debt, once that starts to quiet, and as our stock market starts to heat up, I think the bond market's going to start to drop.
Yeah, I think
so
the
too. Prices. Okay, we got their 5-second flashy card thing. Lisa's waving at me again. Take a quick break. What, 30 seconds? We'll be right back. Stick around.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 15 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
All right, we're back. See, as promised, we're going to make the breaks a little shorter and keep you just coming back for more. It's good stuff. Speaking of coming back, auto sales are definitely coming back. We're seeing continued strength in that segment or the auto industry. That's an entire industry. And what we're seeing is a nice trend.
Very nice.
And the numbers are up. Well, we got an annualized rate of over 14 million cars sold in January. Now, that's not how many they sold in January.
Yeah, that's the annualized rate.
That's the annualized rate. They sold a little over 900,000 cars in January.
Right. That's an increase of about 11% versus last January.
Beautiful.
That's very, very strong. Very good numbers. And some big, big moves from Chrysler and Volkswagen reported increases of more than 40% apiece from a year ago. So really big news there. And you know what is really encouraging, David, is that it is increasing jobs. So we're seeing a lot of plants being built. Nissan is building a plant adding to a plant in Tennessee. That'll be 1,200 jobs. Ford has announced 7,000 new jobs. GM is going to add 6,300 new jobs. Toyota, another 2,000 new jobs. So that's good stuff there.
That's wonderful. Yay. Good news.
Yep, good news
for
us.
I like that. We have friends in the auto industry, and we're really glad to see that uptick and turnaround.
Yep, good stuff there.
You want to talk about the elephant in the room, which is IPOs. We got a big IPO thing going on. That big Blizzard thing.
That big IPO thing. Yeah, big thing. Facebook announced they're going to try to raise $5 billion, although that's what they call a placeholder. So that's just sort of their initial number that they floated out. It's expected that it'll be more in the range of about $10 billion in total money that they have planned. If you really dig through their filing, because they have to file with the registration bodies and all that stuff and say what they're going to do with the money, what the business plan is, all that kind of stuff. They said they don't really need the money. They're not exactly sure what they're going to do with it. There's nothing specific, strategically speaking, that they're going to do with it, but it'd be nice to have.
That's weird. I mean, is it normally that vague?
Not normally.
So why is it that they're doing this? Is this basically, is it simply just a matter of saying I want to diversify and not have all of my money in Facebook for Zuckerman?
It can be, although he's still going to own 57% of the voting shares.
He's still got control.
Yeah, so he's still big there. And it could very well be that they're trying to raise this money so they can buy Twitter or something like that. And if they write that in the document, then it's over. The price goes through the
roof.
Good
point. Then they can't buy it.
Right. So, but just to give you an idea of the massive growth of Facebook, revenue in 2009, $770 million. Revenue in 2011, $3.7 billion. How's that? And they're turning it into profit. 2009 earnings, $229 million. 2011 earnings, $1 billion. Now, this is the first chance we've had to look at this because as a private company, they don't have to announce any of it. So all this stuff is news and it's been...
They don't put that on their wall.
No, and it has been eye-popping.
Well, here's what's interesting, and this is the question that everybody's thinking right now, Scott, as you share all those beautiful numbers. The question that they're wondering is, okay, so should I buy it? Should I go and buy shares of Facebook if there's a chance to buy it?
Yeah, well, I know at some point we want to have a lengthy discussion about risk, and for me, you can't really answer that question until you know where it's priced, and I'm not talking about the IPO price. I'm talking about the price that it actually trades on. There are things that make me nervous about that company. 85% of their revenue comes from advertising. That's very, very, very concentrated. Their CEO is a 27-year-old guy who had a great idea and has grown it, but he has not really shown any ability or had any experience in managing a billion-dollar company or a $50 billion company or whatever it is. So there are things that would cause me some concern. And then also, I think anytime you get just general public buzz about a company where people just feel like they have to have a piece of Facebook, that's a pretty good time to stay away from it.
Well, what are we looking at? Price point? What kind of, you know what they're going to...
We
don't know yet. Okay. Well, here there have been, and I did a little research on this, and there have been IPOs that just went bust.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll give you an example. I did...
Remember theglobe.com?
Well, hey, funny you mentioned that. That is number 10.
Is it?
Very good, Scott.
Thank
Scott
you.
Did not read that. Number 10. You guys see why Scott's part of our company, Holland Financial.
Thank
there you go. The 10 biggest IPO flops in history from our friends over at HowStuffWorks.com. And you guessed it. Number 10, The Globe. They started out at $9 a share IPO price. This is back in, where am I? Back in...
Probably 90.
Yeah, late
90s. Something like that.
They priced it at $9 a share. They skyrocketed to $65 a share by the end of the first day.
And it took them 2 years to go out of business, right? Something like that?
And it took them very little time, and then they're toast.
Yeah.
So if you go to their website, theglobe.com, it's just one page and says we're dead.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're not dead, and we're going to be very lively and come back. Take another quick break, and we'll be right back to talk more about some of the other biggest IPOs, flops in history, and why that should give you pause in jumping into an IPO.
9 cents. That's it. 9 cents is all it takes to feed a person if you donate wisely. Have you ever been approached on the street or the side of the road by somebody asking for a couple of bucks and thought, where's my money going? Well, when you choose to donate to Halifax Urban Ministries, that same $2 can buy 20 meals and will be used to win the fight against homelessness. I am a proud supporter and I want to encourage you to put your money towards something real. Visit HalifaxUrbanMinistries.org to find out how you can help or call 386-252-0156. 386-252-0156.
All right, that 30 seconds goes fast. Here we are again. All right, back to it. We were talking about IPOs, and the caution here, because we were talking about the 10 biggest IPO flops in history, And we just talked about number 10, The Globe, and they were a big media company, social media websites. This is back before the Facebook days. The caution here is, you know, if you're thinking about running out and buying some Facebook when the stock IPOs, be careful, because The Globe, as I was talking about, went from $9 a share to $65 a share first day, and today it's worthless. Number 9, Shonda Games. They have the ticker of GAME, Game, a gaming company all into online gaming market. The short story is they IPO'd at $12.50 a share, and today it's worth $3.61. So let's put this in real dollars. You have an itch you just got to scratch. You say, I got to get this stock, whatever the IPO price is. You buy, and let's say it was Shonda Games you bought into, and you put, I don't know, let's say $10,000 into it. And the stock price went from $12.50 to $3.61. Basically, you got 25 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
So your $10,000 investment is now worth $2,500.
Well, even in that social media space, I mean, we've seen Groupon has had a very, very hard time after IPO. You look at a company like MySpace, who was Facebook before Facebook, and they're kind of off the planet now. So it's not unprecedented that a company like that can go away.
Vonage went $17 a share on its IPO, worth $2.50 today. That's horrendous. That's like 1/8 the value. You're getting 16% of your money. Pets.com IPO'd it. Remember that one? $14 a share.
Super Bowl ads for them.
Yeah, and back in 2000, they IPO'd at $14 a share. So if you had to have some Pets.com, well, you know what it's worth today? Nada, niente, nothing. Wired Ventures, another one. They never even made the IPO. Webvan.com.
Oh, yeah. That was grocery delivery, right?
I don't see a number here for this, but they went bust. Cosmo.com, they IPO'd, and what they lay out? They got $280 million in their IPO or private investors, and they're worth nothing. eToys, they went out at $20 a share IPO, got to $76 a share on their opening day. And now they're worth zip. So the list goes on and on.
What's number one?
Number one is Omeros, O-M-E-R-O-S, biotechnology firm. They IPO'd back in 2009 at $10 a share. Today they're worth just under $6. So you've lost, what is that, about 40% of your money. So again, you look at these numbers. And I guess the bottom line here, and you know, you mentioned it before, Scott, look before you leap in terms of the risk. I'm very reluctant to recommend people go into a bunch of individual stocks, especially an IPO, because you just don't know where it's going to land. You know, what are they going to do with the money? How are they going to take this and they're going to grow it? If they're getting all this capital, they already are an existing business like Facebook. What are they going to do with the money?
Yeah, and there's a lot of competition. Google has their sights set firmly on them, so it's not going to be an easy road for them.
So, you know, the thing that people, I think, worry about, and we saw this a lot in the late 1990s and early 2000s, is you hear about your friends getting in on it, and you're like, oh, I don't want to miss out, because you don't want to be the sucker. You don't want to be the person that didn't buy the stock. You don't want to be the person that didn't participate in the lottery pool at work, right? You don't want to be the only person sitting there if the winning lottery ticket comes in and you kick yourself for the rest of your life. So people say, oh, I've got to get in on it. And then it goes bad. It goes bust. They say, oh, well, you know, everybody else lost. Well, if everybody else lost, you're still lost too.
It's still money.
You still lost the money. You might be better off with a lottery ticket for some of these IPOs.
Yep.
So anyway, that's the caution. We've got to be careful with individual stocks and buying in. Obviously, we would advocate, if you've been listening to the show, we would advocate a diversified portfolio. If you want to pick a flyer, you want to throw one in, it needs to be your play money, your serious money. I liken it to the dinghy and the big ship. The big ship needs to be invested. Your main money needs to be invested. Diversified, professionally managed if possible. And if you want to take the dinghy and have it play around with a stock and have it bust, I had a client not long ago, this was a couple of years ago, he wanted me to buy him a company called Burst Technologies, and it did. And I thankfully convinced him to limit his purchase, and it just wasn't good. So this is the caution, this is the concern about getting in individual stocks. I know it's exciting, but we've got to be careful. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back and give you some other very interesting information. Stay right there.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
We're back. Hey, we're back. We're doing these quick breaks, and we're trying to make it exciting and easy and interesting and to stay on task, and we get ahead of ourselves. Here's what I want to talk about.
We don't have time to chit-chat anymore.
No chit-chatting, Scott. We can't do that. I don't like chit-chat. I want serious talk. So what we're going to talk about, I'm not releasing you. I want to talk for a couple minutes here about this whole concept of risk.
All right.
And so
I love risk.
Yeah.
I mean, I love to talk about risk.
You don't like risk.
I don't like risk.
You know, here's a thing that occurs to me that I think people need to keep in mind. Risk is a good thing, but it can be a bad thing too. You know, risk gets the entrepreneur up at 5 in the morning, get him up, get him going, he or she getting to work and doing their thing. Risk is a good thing because it's what drives America. It's what drives economic engines, because without risk, the world would just be one big fat CD.
Yeah.
That doesn't pay anything.
That's right.
It would all be U.S. Treasuries paying 1.85%.
Yeah.
So risk creates opportunity for reward. That creates opportunity for growth. But the flip side of that is risk can also be a bad thing if you are too much where you're not supposed to be.
Yeah. And my experience with most self-directed investors is that they don't consider risk until risk has moved against them. You know, when the market is down 15%, that's when they say, ooh, maybe I took on too much risk. You have to measure your risk tolerance at all times, knowing that the market can move against you any day.
But when you say that, Scott, people say, hey, yeah, I hear you, Scott, but I don't know what that means, measuring my risk. You know,
Yeah. How
do people get a handle on the amount of risk that they're willing to take? Because, you know, you're right. People say, I could have, would have, should have, why didn't I? But when they're in the thick of it and things look like they're going well, they want you to load up on growth
Yeah. And
be risky, or they want to be risky themselves.
Yeah. I'm going to get nerdy on you.
Well, get nerdy and I'll translate. That's okay. Go ahead.
There are a lot of ways to measure risk. The first is standard deviation, which I think is a worthless measurement of risk. And all standard deviation does is it says, statistically speaking, this portfolio should either be up this much or down this much 95%
of
the time.
Yeah, but it's looking in the rearview mirror and it's saying, here's how risky it was, and here's the wandering path it was on for the last 3 years.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, I mean, we'll take as much upside volatility as we can get, right?
Everybody wants that.
But we don't want the downside, and it measures them equally. So it's a problem with the measurement. There's a thing called a Sortino ratio, which I like. There's a thing called an ulcer index, which I like. There's a thing called a semi-deviation, which I like. If you want a breakdown of all these, call me.
Please no. Please no.
Well, call me. I'll do it. But I think one thing clients can look at is value at risk. Well, the value at risk concept basically puts a probability of losing a certain amount of money on a certain investment. So you might say, you know, I'm going to invest $1,000 and the most I'll lose with a 95% confidence level, I won't lose more than, say, $200. And that's at least a starting point. But the thing about investing in risk is that clients don't measure mentally, emotionally, they don't measure positive return the same way they measure negative return. So a positive return of 15% on a portfolio, clients will say, yay.
That's good. Thanks.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. You know, it's not changing my life. But a negative return of 15% is a very, very, very dramatic event. They don't measure it the same way emotionally. So you have to protect against risk first.
That's a really good assessment, because that is the typical reaction that a lot of people have. So if you feel that way, ladies and gentlemen, that's very typical. And, you know, the thing that people have to get in their mind is that they've got to be honest with themselves and look at what's best for them. And they need to ignore this propaganda that's out there. Okay, there's a lot of propaganda, especially from the securities industry, and we hear it all the time, or we have, you know, people that come in and we look at what they're doing. And the propaganda out there is that, you know, you got to take risks to make money, and don't, if the market falls, don't worry, it'll come back. That's another classic one.
Yep.
And hey, you're not in it alone. Everybody lost money.
Yeah, I mean, what I have always told clients is that if the market goes down and you can't eat, you can't sleep, you've taken on too much risk. You have to fix it, and when things get better, don't unfix it.
Exactly. Don't say, okay, I'm going to abandon my risk protection or my risk aversion
Yeah. In
favor of let's go hog wild.
Because whatever caused you to lose sleep and lose the ability to eat can happen again anytime.
So you got to stick with a program, and you got to make sure that that program is right from the beginning. And a lot of times people just they don't quite get that. And as some of it's just as basic as not understanding what's at money that's at risk and money that's not at risk. And just real quick, money that's at risk, if you're investing in common stocks, you talk about the stock market, that's common stocks, preferred stocks, mutual funds, variable annuities, commercial paper, real estate investment trusts, bonds. These are all things that can go up and down in value. So we'll talk more about this on another show, but please remember that you've got to take stock of your stocks and how much risk you're taking and make sure that you're not, as Scott said, you're not going to lose sleep when it goes in the when it tanks or drops, because it may take time for it to come back. Thanks for being with us today.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.